What's up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. We're in episode 96, and this episode is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something that helps the podcast and just helps us keep on going here. It is Sunday, and with me, as always, I have Derek. What's up, Derek?
Not much. How you doing, Bob?
It's Sunday. I'm at the office today, so if it sounds different. I don't know if it sounds different.
Sounds like you have a plane outside your window or something.
I think it's just the air conditions on or something. I don't know. Does it sound that bad?
No. It's just noise.
Yeah. I have my mic pickup turned down a little bit, so hopefully that'll help out.
How you been? We missed a week.
I know. We missed... We haven't been consistent. I don't know why I called the Weekly Tech Podcast, because it hasn't been weekly.
we try.
Yeah, I was really busy last week, so that's my fault. I just was trying to get a lot of stuff done, which you'll see become part of a lot of stuff in the coming weeks, so I'm pretty excited. It's all kind of like finally coming together, which I'm pretty happy with, but yeah, what about you? Good. And how's life?
Busy selling a house, buying a house.
Yeah.
Pretty much destroys all of your time.
Yeah, that happens. That's, you know, it's called adulting.
Yeah, it sucks. I'd rather just computer.
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather just computer or like have time to play video games or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so. But let's jump into our reviews this week. And last week, I actually took a look at the Ryzen 7 1700. And this week, I released the video. And I'm pretty happy with our video. That is actually the first video that I shot on the new camera. I don't know if we talked about the new camera, did I?
I think you touched on it.
Okay, well, that's the first video that's completely 100% shot on the new camera. So I'm pretty happy with how the video came out. But so this was my first look at Ryzen, and it's still a pretty big deal. I mean, it's been out for about, a month now?
Like that. Yeah, it seems like that.
Yeah, and it was really cool to check out the platform and all of that. And I, as I said, got a look at the Ryzen 7 1700, which is the lowest of the Ryzen 7 processors. It runs 3.0 gigahertz, boosts up to 3.7, has the 65 watt TDP, but it's still fully unlocked. The only thing it doesn't have is the XFR feature. But it's a great processor.
So for those who don't know, what's XFR, Bob?
That is the extended frequency range. So the X models of the Ryzen 7 processor, so you have the 1800X and 1700X, they'll actually boost over their advertised boost speed depending on your cooling. So this processor has like a ton of sensors inside, and it will know if you have like an AIO or liquid cooling or just this incredibly crazy air cooler. And if you have that, it's going to boost even higher than the default boost speed, which is cool, which gives you even more kind of like auto overclocking than what you would even normally get. But this processor, which I took a look at, did not have that.
Gotcha.
But just as far as performance goes, and there's been a lot out there already. The biggest thing is when it comes to pure CPU performance, especially multi-threaded performance, this processor beats the Intel Core processors no problem. If you're doing any like encoding or things like that, this processor is really going to help you out. The multi-threaded performance, again, you have 8 cores, 16 threads. It's really going to do a great job. You know, the big issue with these processors is the single core performance as well as gaming performance. So we tested a few games with these processors, and it turns out that the Core i7 at 7700K and the Core i7 at 6700K most of the time beat out the processor, you know, beat out in gaming performance, which is kind of it's a little surprising. You know, that's what... Yeah. That's what AMD really marketed this as, the gamers, you know, the gamers processor, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
They went really hard on that front.
Yeah. So that is, you know, and AMD did address this, and they did say that, hey, we're working with developers to fully optimize, but it's something you're going to want to consider, because if you're looking at a Z270 system or a Ryzen system, you know, especially if you're looking at this processor, because this processor pretty much directly competes with the i7 7700K, you know, when it comes to gaming, you're gonna lose some frames using this processor, at least currently. Yeah. And that's an issue for a lot of people. And beyond that, the big issue with the platform, at least in my experience, was it's still very unstable. You know, when I was using it, I had to go through like 3 different memory kits for it to work correctly, which is kind of a big deal.
It's a super big deal.
Yeah. The biggest thing, at least in my understanding, is that if you have a memory kit that's above 2133 megahertz, you actually have to overclock the processor to get the memory running at that speed. Now, that's fine for most people. Like, everybody, you know, I'll overclock a little bit to get my memory up to where I want it. But for us, we needed it to run at default speed because we obviously wanted to test it at its default speed. So it was kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Trying to get things set up.
Not everyone's going to want to do any overclocking.
Yeah, I mean, that's the case too. And in a lot of times when memory didn't work or we were overclocking, instead of like just rebooting, the system would just like my screen would turn off and then like it would just stop. Like, it's not like the normal like, oh, I overclocked too hard, it's going to reboot or it's going to tell me the overclocking messed up. Like, it just didn't do it. It just kind of just and there was like a code on the display that like wasn't a code in the book for our motherboard. It was just like it's still very unstable. It's like getting that first new you know, the new architecture. It's just like it just wasn't as refined. I'm so used to testing Intel stuff. It's just so easy. And when it comes to memory, you set your XMP profile, you're good to go. With this, it was just a little unstable and just a little annoying. And at least the motherboard, which we'll talk about in a second, which is the Asus ROG Crosshair 6 Hero, there was like a ton of BIOS updates within like two weeks of me having it. And the BIOS, like, everything still didn't seem that stable when it came to that motherboard. Like, it's just a lot of issues. And I think it has a lot to do with that AMD kind of rushed this out a little bit. And it just wasn't it wasn't tested enough. And I don't think either there was some disconnect between AMD and motherboard manufacturers about certain things. I don't know.
Just not enough real world time with the chip before release.
Yeah. And not enough time working directly with motherboard manufacturers to make sure they have everything done correctly. Like, it's just, I don't know. But at the end of the day, the biggest thing that I took away from this review is that, one, AMD went back to the drawing board and they completely redesigned this chip. They've been designing this for 4 years now. And they basically took a loss or a hit, really not really competing against Intel at all for a few years, you know, or not really trying to compete, knowing that they had this coming out. And if you look at the performance from Bulldozer to this, it's incredible. It's the biggest jump increase, the biggest IPC increase that we've seen in processors in such a long time. I mean, right. You have to say hats off to AMD for that. And secondly, hats off for trying to be, or, you know, being competitive with Intel. And the reason I say that, whether you're an AMD fanboy or you're an Intel fanboy, whatever it is, having competition not only is great for the consumer because it brings down prices, as we've already seen, but it also allows people to innovate. You know, if Intel is just, oh, we have to do this incremental update all the time, we don't need to do anything special for gamers or enthusiasts, you don't have any innovation. You know what I mean? But if there's somebody else putting stuff out there that's innovative, then you're going to see the innovation come back. So I think that's what I kind of took out of the review, and that it is pure CPU performance. It's really impressive, especially for the price.
Yes. It's definitely got Intel scrambling on the pure performance side because they're just no longer like the go-to chip for that, I would say. But as far as the whole market, I think that they're probably breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief, and we're definitely going to see an upswing in quality parts from both sides now, thanks to the Ryzen series.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that once the platform matures a little bit and it becomes more of like a mainstream thing, I think we'll see a lot more stability and a lot more people using it. And I think that once AMD does address some of these other issues, it's going to be a better platform. But again, if you're looking between the two, it all depends on what you're doing, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you're a pure gamer, you probably don't want Ryzen yet.
Yeah, I wouldn't think. At least not
probably
yet.
Probably not until next next generation, you know, and you gotta give them credit too, because like Intel has had a pretty, you know, the Core series has been around for a really long time.
Yeah.
So quite well developed architecture and all the other stuff that goes along with that. So it's they'll get there, I think.
Yeah, it's like I said, I think the biggest thing that I took away is that great for AMD for doing what they did. You know, it obviously took a lot of time and resources to get these chips out there, and that they are good chips. It's not like they put out something we're like, you know, I forget when the FX series was kind of a joke.
Name any series back to Pentium days.
Yeah, and the thing is too is they achieved this great performance at a lower TDP and more controlled temperatures than Intel. So that's something as well.
Yeah. It's hard to like give credit for things like that though, when there's so much instability though. In my opinion, like those are good things, but your chip is so unstable. I don't know if I believe that it's. I don't know. Maybe it needs some more voltage.
It's the chip that's unstable. I would say it's the more platform issues.
More the platform.
Yeah, I think the chips are pretty solid. It's just. One, things aren't optimized correctly. Two, there's the issues with memory and things like that. And obviously, like, the different motherboard issues, which are more platform. You know.
But it's all, you know, it's, yeah.
Yeah, so, but, hand in hand, though. Yeah, I think, again, just give the platform some time. And, you know, I think I should revisit this review in a few months from now and kind of see how things are. I think that'd be cool.
Wait a few months and get a massive BIOS update and see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. So talking about that, this week I took a look at the Asus ROG Crosshair 6 Hero motherboard, and this is the AM4 or Ryzen motherboard that we all had been talking about. Everybody was talking about more or less like this is the board to get for Ryzen, and I would have to say that it is one of the top boards if you're looking to build a Ryzen system. This is one of the boards you should definitely look into. It is one of the most highly featured boards, X370 boards that's out there currently. And, you know, it's an Asus board. As much as some people, you know, don't like certain things Asus does, all of their boards are completely solid. And this is a Republic of Gamers board. So you have a two-way Crossfire SLI support. You have the Supreme FX audio, which is like really awesome on this board, and that works hand in hand with their Sonic Radar, which pretty much uses sound to show you where enemies are in game. Again, you have RGB here, and you have two RGB headers on the board itself, so you can connect your RGB kits, and they'll all be in sync with what's going on with the motherboard. BIOS is pretty good. And the companion software is really great on this as well. So,
good.
So basically, you've got a solid entry board with full featured standard level board.
Yeah, it's fully featured. Has a ton of USB. There are 14 USB ports on the rear I/O, which is crazy. You know, it is the one of the highest end boards that you can get currently for the X370 chipset. And it's. I really can't say much bad about it. There's not a whole lot bad about it. Maybe the price is a little higher than most boards, but considering the features, you know.
Yeah.
But I do like it, and if you're looking to build a Ryzen system, this is definitely a board that I can recommend to you. So.
And it's still $255, which is not that expensive compared to the Intel boards we've seen.
Yes. But it, again... these Ryzen boards do lack a lot of the features that the high-end Z270s, like there's no PLX chip on this, obviously.
Yeah.
These boards do not have U.2. While they have M.2, your PCI Express is limited, so there's typically one on this board. With this caliber of board on Z270, you would see at least two.
Yeah.
And you'd probably have U.2 on there as well.
So a good reason for the price difference.
Yeah. So, but like I said, it is a really great board for Ryzen. One of the top ones that I would recommend for sure.
Nice.
Yes. And then we have two gaming products. One was actually pretty cool, and that is the Tesoro Excalibur SE Spectrum gaming keyboard. And the reason this is cool, so we took a look at the Excalibur Spectrum like 2 years ago, And this is more or less the same keyboard, but it uses a new type of key switch. And these are optical switches. So instead of in a normal mechanical switch, you have two pieces of metal contacts that when you press down, they make contact and complete that circuit.
Yeah.
With this uses an infrared sensor. So whenever the stem of the key passes through that sensor, imagine like a laser, it passes through, it makes that, it activates the switch or activates the, you know, what you're typing. Yeah. And this is brand new technology. And the whole reason behind this is because if you're using a mechanical keyboard time and time again, those metal pieces, they get wear, and a lot of times you'll get a double hit, or mm-hmm. you'll get a little stick. And this is kind of like the way out of that. And it's actually incredibly responsive. Just going on the key switches themselves, they're basically designed almost like a mechanical keys. They're pretty much a mechanical key with just one metal contact. And the only reason that metal contact is there is to give you that feedback like you would on a mechanical keyboard.
Yeah.
But the whole mechanism of activating the actual switch is all optical. And it's pretty cool and very, very responsive. It was really good. Very comfortable keyboard. And that's all the good stuff. The one thing that I really didn't like about this keyboard is that there's no software.
They go and they make an awesome switch and then they pair it with no software?
Yeah, so there's no software. And not only does that mean that there is... You have to program everything yourself. And
yeah.
I'm sorry, but like in this day and age when like... you know, if I'm programming like this crazy long macro for my MMO, I don't want to do that by hand. And I don't even want to reprogram my keys by hand anyways.
I don't want to do the colors.
Yeah, and so this is technically... They don't advertise it RGB. There's like seven colors available. It is technically an RGB switch, but they don't like... It doesn't like allow you to fully use it because, you don't have software to change it. So you can only go through like the seven main colors on each switch. It was really annoying and like a complete letdown because I really like the switches and I really like the build quality of this keyboard.
Yeah.
But no software...
I don't even want to personally. I don't really don't want to review a board that doesn't have software.
Yeah, and the thing
it's a total letdown.
The thing that bothered me was the original Excalibur that we took looked at 2 years ago had software. That software today would be like super dated, I would rather use dated buggy software than no software at all.
I'd rather they get their game together and.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this
quality product. Yeah, this is definitely something that like we hang up on, and maybe that doesn't bother you, but I think that it probably should.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. It's like take the time to invest the money to get decent software developers to develop this software for you. Because I mean, if you look at the big gaming brands, like I right now have my SteelSeries mouse that I'm using right here. The SteelSeries engine, awesome. You know what I mean? What are they, like the Rocket, I forget what theirs is called. Awesome. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it worked, the Corsair software, awesome. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And I think that makes a big part of it. You can make a great product, you know, physically, but you need the software there.
Yeah, like you can make an awesome deck. It can work perfectly. I mean, it's learnable, right? Like, especially when you're not, you know, reviewing multiple boards, you can easily, like, memorize how it works, but I feel like it's still a headache.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you're going to do macros and stuff.
And the thing that's nice, I mean, when you talk about software, a lot of the software, like the SteelSeries engine and stuff, like, you can add your games in, and then you can have a profile for that game specifically, and then whenever you launch that application... It changes all your stuff to that set. Like, it's just convenience. You know what I mean? And I think
it's definitely convenience, but it's beyond convenience. I think it's a necessary function. If you're going RGB, you gotta have software.
Yeah, for sure. And I would have given this a much higher. I gave it an 8 out of 10 because it is great build quality.
The switch is neat. That's a really cool switch.
Yeah, the switches are really, really cool. There's like no flex in this keyboard. Like, it's a good keyboard, but just not having the software, it brings it down. You know, I would have loved to have software with this. So,
yeah. Any thought on the, like, they're replacing the metal contacts with a laser, right? What about wear or what about lifespan on that?
I'm not exactly sure. I'm not exactly sure. And the thing that's cool about this as well is this keyboard, because it doesn't have the metal contacts and it's like a technically like an optical. This is spill proof. So you could like drop water on it and it won't break. And they put this really like hardcore coating on the entire inner PCB. So it's like dust proof, spill proof, and all that. So that's something else that you don't get with a mechanical keyboard. So I think that obviously adds to like the lifetime of these switches in some, you know, form or fashion.
Yeah, no, certainly, yeah.
So I'm not exactly sure. You know, I think that's something I should definitely ask them. You know, I think that if they're, you know, if they brought out these switches to obviously be an option compared to mechanical, and the biggest thing that they told me is like mechanical over time they wear down, blah blah blah. So I think that these should last technically longer. I don't know though.
Yeah, I would imagine that there's not many wear studies on that though.
Yeah, yeah. So something we maybe have to keep in mind. I'm still using the keyboard because I actually do like it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like kind of like for like just typing and stuff. I don't need any macros or anything like that. And the RGB, like the lights, I have it set on a mode where like every time I type, it changes the color. So I kind of like that. But
yeah,
Like I said, the biggest thing, no software. So that's, if you're looking at this keyboard, they are going to bring out a Gram SE Spectrum that will have software. They said it will have software. So
okay.
That's something you might want to wait for. And you reviewed their Gram, did you not? Or maybe I did.
I think you did. I don't think I've ever done a tutorial.
Okay. But yeah, so definitely something to keep in mind. And then finally, another really interesting piece of gaming gear that I took a look at is the Epic Gear Morpha X. And this is a modular gaming mouse, meaning that you can replace the switches, you can replace the sensor, you can replace the outer panels of the mouse. And my biggest thing is those are all great and that's fine. This mouse only makes sense if you're going to use those things. You know, if you're somebody who plays two completely different types of gaming styles or two different types of games where you will actually take advantage of both sensors that come with this or both switches that come with this, yes, this is a great thing because then you won't need your MMO mouse or your FPS mouse or however you want to do it.
Yeah.
This kind of eliminates that problem. And the ability, like I can have the mouse plugged in, I can swap out a sensor, no problem. I can swap out a switch, no problem. I don't have to unplug or do anything like that. It's completely plug and play. It's really, really cool. And it's the way they designed it, it's really great. I just don't think that there's enough people that are going to take full advantage of this.
Frankly, like personally, I don't want this. I don't want another thing to mess with before I start gaming. But
yeah, well, yeah,
that might just be a time thing. Where, like, I'm just about, like, if I'm going to game, I'm going to get on, I'm going to play, and it's not about screwing around, you know?
True. Very true. And I think, too, it's that, you know, if I'm an MMO gamer, I'm going to get, like, the MMO mouse, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm going to get that mouse. Or if I'm an FPS, I'm going to get, like, the FPS mouse. I'm not going to get this mouse that's made for everything because it's going to fall short on certain things that I wanted to do for my specific game.
Yeah. Good at a lot of things, best at nothing, right?
Yeah, so that's the thing. Again, it's a very interesting concept, and I do like it. And I think that if you do like this mouse and you do have different gaming styles and you're going to use both switches and both sensors, yes. It, you know. But if not, I mean, it is pretty expensive, too. I forget the price. It's $90.
Oh, that is way too much money.
Yeah, that's an expensive. And the price makes sense for what you get. But if you don't use it, again...
I don't know. That's too much money for a mouse, I think.
Again, you're getting two high-grade sensors. You're getting two sets of switches. But, like, again, if you don't use the sensors, you're not getting your money's worth, right?
Are there any other mice that expensive?
Yeah, there's some Razer.
Logitech has one.
Logitech, Razer. Everybody has like one that's around this price.
Okay.
But like they're like the most decked out mice you can buy.
Yeah, that the $90. That's just. I mean, that's a keyboard. That's a mechanical keyboard.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's the thing. It's
like a mouse should not cost. I guess, and what I'm saying is, a mouse should not cost as much as a keyboard.
That's very true.
But hey, there's definitely people who money is not a consideration. So there's always, you know, a market for that. If I think that person though is just going to buy two mice.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that I'm going to buy the most decked out mouse for MMO or MOBA, yeah. And I'm going to buy the most decked out mouse for FPS. If I'm that type of gamer, I think that's my thing. And I think that Epic Gear had the right idea, but I don't think enough people are going to take advantage where they're going to get their money's worth.
No.
And like you said, it's like it's not the best mouse at anything.
Yeah.
It's not like made for a specific type of game, or it's a great overall mouse. It's comfortable to use. I like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But besides that, it doesn't, if I'm playing MMOs, it doesn't have enough buttons. You know what I mean? Like it's,
yeah, you can't fix that.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I think it's cool. And I think that the design is very innovative, like being able to pop out a sensor and put it, you know what I mean? I think it's cool.
I think you'd be better off with like a panel of buttons you could pop off and remove.
Yeah, I think.
Right? Like sensors, who cares?
Yeah, because I think that too, at least in my case, once I get used to a mouse, like the sensor, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Not to like, mention like all these super fast sensors, nobody uses the full speed on them.
Yeah, I don't. I'm like 1600.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I know I'm not a pro gamer or anything, but like I've never seen somebody that is that twitchy.
Yeah, me neither.
Innovating in the computer gaming market is probably difficult. So they gave it their best shot, but I think you're spot on that the market for this is nearly non-existent.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So those are our reviews this week. A lot of cool stuff. Definitely cool to check out the AM4 platform from AMD. Really excited about that. So we'll move on to Case Mod Friday. And this week we have one of the most interesting builds that I've seen. And this is basically somebody built a PC that looks like it's built out like a minigun.
Yeah, like a Gatling gun.
Yeah. It's like crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Let's describe it for them.
I mean, it's like, okay, so if you think about a big minigun that you would hold with two hands, this thing has a full, like, extended barrel, like Derek said, like a Gatling gun, but that's actually water cooling tubes that actually do work, and they're part of the loop,
okay,
which is crazy.
Okay, is it filled with water? Okay, I was curious.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's going to function as a reservoir.
Yeah, they do have a reservoir as well, but
oh, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, but those they just go up and come back, like. Yeah. But they are part of the loop, which I was kind of curious about.
Yeah, I figured they weren't. Without looking more closely, I figured they were not. But that's cool that they used it.
Yeah, so they're part of the loop, and then there's like this main custom made chassis that has like the motherboard, and then it has the graphics card that's like. They use a riser card, so the graphics card's kind of like sitting right on top of the motherboard, so it doesn't take up like all the space. And then you have the radiator mounted on the one side, reservoir on the other, power supply on the other side. It's a really cool design, and it's something that's like, I know these are just like made for a certain like.
It's like a show.
Yeah, it's like a showpiece or something like that. But I think it's really cool. And the thing that I love about these scratch builds, it's like it's a fully functioning computer. Which is really, really interesting to me. Like having something that functions like that looks like that and I can turn it on and play games on it is really, really cool. Obviously this is like they said this was made for like Battlefield 1 and it's like AMD themed, so like all of the coolant is red. And all of the, like, it's an AMD-based build, and then you have the MSI Gaming X card, which, if you don't know, those are, like, those have red accents and everything. So, it all goes together pretty well. I like it.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't get the Battlefield 1 thing, but that's fine.
Yeah, because Battlefield 1, I don't think they had this type of gun, but...
No, that's okay.
Yeah. Anyways, but that's what I was reading when I was going through it and finding this thing, so... Cool. Really cool, and they actually have a whole video going over everything that they did as well, so you can, that's in the post, so you can go ahead and check that out. Cool. And we will move to our news this week, and to something you might be interested in really more than me, I think, you know, is that NVIDIA announced a new Titan graphics card, quietly.
Yeah. Nothing like bringing out a $1,200 graphics card quietly. Kind of a silent launch. The Titan XP.
Yes. So
replacing the old Titan X. Yes. Because with the 1080 Ti, just essentially neutered the Titan X. So got to have something to sell at that price point, because there's a buyer for that, of course.
Always.
Always. Yeah, but it's this is a full featured.
Yeah, it's processor. Fully featured. So it features all 3,840 CUDA cores that are on the GP102, all the TMUs, all the ROPs, all that kind of stuff. And it has 12 gigabytes of the faster 11.4 gigabit a second GDDR5X memory.
Lame.
You wouldn't want one of these?
I'm not going to pay $1,200 for a card that doesn't have a HBM2.
I know. You've listened to this podcast since the beginning of this podcast, Derek's like, I want an HBM2 card. I need it. And
so far, it's yet to be delivered.
Yes. Well, in the price range that you want.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to buy an AMD card.
Yeah, that too. So
that's really the hang up.
Yeah, so interesting enough, this card, which is called the Titan XP, is it's going to be sold exclusively through GeForce.com. You won't be able to buy it in stores, at least for the time being.
Gotcha.
So there is a buyer for this, as you said. $1,200 is quite a lot.
Yeah, I bought two Titans, though, for that much, so there's definitely buyers for this stuff.
Yes, for sure. So moving on from there, we'll go over to the other side, which is AMD. And we've heard a lot about their RX 570 and 580, as well as the RX 550. And pictures have surfaced of the RX 570 and 580. Not much to really write home about. But the one interesting thing about these, at least the pictures revealed that they've redone the power delivery system. And this is a big deal, because this means that, well, I mean, they are still technically rebrands. It's not like they've taken the old PCBs of these cards and just up the clock speed. You're going to get a better VRM, which is good, because they did have issues with the 400 series with power. So they did, you know, but these cards, the reference cards that we see in these pictures, and they're pretty much the same as the other reference, the 480 and 470 cards. So.
It totally lame to see that the most power delivery you're going to get is an 8-pin.
Yes, at least on the reference.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's the standard, right? That's what we have to judge the whole series.
Yeah, and the thing is, yeah, so again, these are rebrands of the RX 480, which, again, it's not obviously in the same league as the GTX 1080 or even 1070. It's more or less on the... you know, 1060-ish type deal.
Yeah.
You know, but this will be the 500 series, which we all expected to be rebrands.
Rebrands are lame.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah, we're going to see it. We're going to see it. So benchmarks for the 580, 570, and 550 came out this week as well. Again, yeah. It's like, you know, we're so used to talking about this great hardware, especially because the last graphics cards we talked about have been Vega, and then the 1080 Ti, and then, you know, so, you know, these more mainstream graphics cards are not, they don't, like, tickle our fancy, per se.
No.
You know, but...
But that's not even it. It's just that this is a card that's already released. They've just tweaked it. That's just...
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Moving on. That's all I want to say. I mean, like, we'll obviously talk more about it, but to me, that's how I feel.
Well, yeah, and the thing is that's how we've seen it from AMD for so long.
Yeah.
And it's just like, man, thought, it's like, why even release?
I thought they were moving towards better things, right? Better and brighter. No, not really.
That sounds like that sounds like they say at a board meeting. Better and brighter, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. So the benchmarks for that are out, as well as a lot of these cards have been listed online for pre-order. So all of the Asus cards have been listed. So there's six Asus cards, and I think like 12 from Sapphire, which makes sense because Sapphire is the number one seller of AMD graphics cards. But it's the same series, so you have the Strix in the Strix series from Asus, and then for Sapphire you'll have like Nitro, their Pulse, and their Pulse series, in the different flavors. It's, you know,
standard stuff.
Yeah, almost standard.
All they got to do is put a new sticker on it, right?
I mean, they're going to get
the cards. You just call it a 580 now instead of a 480.
Yeah, seriously. makes it easy for those guys, right?
Yeah.
But we'll move to Ryzen. And Ryzen 5 is supposed to come out this week, next week? I forget the actual date. My mind's kind of a blur. But Ryzen 5 is the next. So we talked about Ryzen 7, which has been out for about a month now. And then following down the line will be Ryzen 5, which is supposed to be the biggest bang for your buck, right? This is the performance segment. This is like what everybody is kind of waiting for. Who didn't want to splurge for a Ryzen 7, you'll have Ryzen 5. And a Ryzen 5 1600 review has leaked out, and this is the processor that runs at 3.2 gigahertz and boosts up to 3.6. This is the 6-core, 12-thread processor, and all of the benchmarks are in our little article. This is done by... I can't even say the name. El something Informatico. It's a
Chapuzas Informatico.
Yeah, it's a foreign publication. This is probably because I think that a lot of these foreign countries for some reason are allowing people to buy these chips right now.
Yeah.
So this is the first full review that was done, and the results kind of show, you know, they show it obviously below a 6700K, but close in some benchmarks.
Better in others.
Yeah, better in others. It all depends. Like I said, this stuff's kind of like all over the board. But as far as, again, pure CPU performance, it's pretty good. It beats out the 7700K in like the X24 benchmark, which is an encoding benchmark. You know, again, with these Ryzen processors, it's all about what you want to do. You know, like in Cinebench, it beats out the 7700K as well as a 5930K, which is Intel high-end desktop, you know.
The gaming benchmarks are a little confusing in that they're comparing to 6700K instead of a 7700K.
Yeah, but I think price-wise, this is going to hit price-wise. Because the one that I reviewed, the 1700, that's not match on, but it's like $20 difference between that and a 7700K.
Okay.
So yeah, the review's out there if you want to see how it does. As always, when these pre-launch reviews, I say wait until there's like a good amount of reviews out there, so then you can read quite a lot and get the best judgment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Wait till there's something in your native language so you can
read it.
Can
yes.
read the text as well.
I mean, Google Translate helps, but sometimes it's not the best.
Yeah.
Sometimes
Google translates wrong.
Yes. And then moving from Ryzen 5, which is going to launch this month, and then either like next month or the month after, we'll have Ryzen 3, and that is the entry level. These will be under $140, and they're going to compete against Intel's Core i3 dual-core Kaby Lake processors. And one of these chips, the Ryzen 3, the details have been leaked from a CPU support list on a motherboard. And this is the Ryzen 3 1200, and this is a quad-core AM4 chip. It does not have the SMT, so it is 4-core, 4-thread. SMT is basically like Intel's Turbo Boost, so there's no the hyper-threading. So there's you have 4 cores, so not 8 threads, you have 4 threads. That makes sense.
No virtual cores.
Yes. It's going to have 8 megabytes of L3 cache, and the TDP is going to be 65 watts. The clock speed is 3.1 gigahertz, and then the unknown turbo core, but it's expected to be around 3.4 gigahertz, and this chip will be, like I said, around 140 or less. So, quad core, 140 bucks or less.
Depends on performance.
Yeah, again... You know,
I can sell you a piece of paper for 140 bucks.
Yeah.
If it doesn't perform, it doesn't perform.
I think that it's good that we're going to have a full lineup from AMD on Ryzen. So yeah. you have 7, you have 5, and you have 3. And it's clearly defined. Obviously, we've seen 7, 5, and 3 from another company.
We're very familiar with those numbers.
Yeah, but it's not...
performance stages.
Yeah, it's very easy to understand. It's very easy to know. And they've made it very clear which is which. 7 is 8 core, 5 is 6 core, 3 is 4 core.
That's easy.
Yeah. So
add a 1 to the number and you get the core count.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very easy to kind of figure out, and yeah.
But the 4-core 4-thread thing is interesting because we're so used to seeing the hyper-threading.
Yeah, but a lot of Intel Core i3s do not have hyper-threading as well.
Oh, okay. And they're 4-core?
No, they're dual-core.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. So this is a 4-core with 4
threads, right? Yeah,
so,
like,
it's a little different. Like, we're used to seeing... Because on the Intel side, you get a dual-core that does have hyper-threading. So you get a hypothetical 4-core.
Yeah.
In this case, we get 4-to-4. So, usually... The solid core equals more performance. So these, I would think, would be, but they should be faster than the i3s.
I would think that they would. Again, I think that all of the Ryzen processors, when it comes to the pure CPU performance, like encoding and things like that, they're going to beat whatever they're being compared against. These will be compared against Core i3. They're going to beat those in those benchmarks. Now, when it comes to other things, such as gaming and whatever, it's going to be a mixed bag, at least currently.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like, again, I like that we're getting a full lineup from AMD. So whether you're looking at the low end or you're looking at the high end, and then even down the line, we've talked about there is going to be a high end desktop as well for Ryzen. So you're going to have, you're going to actually have, here are the Intel parts that I can get for all of these segments. Here are the AMD parts I can get for all these segments. Which one am I going to get? It's nice to have that variety these days because we haven't had it in so long. So,
yeah,
yeah.
And for nothing else, if you aren't going to choose, if you're pretty happy with Intel, if nothing else, it should drive your price down.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So we'll move from that to displays, and apparently Samsung is working on 32.9 and 29.9 ultra wide panels.
That's
so
crazy.
Typically, if you're looking at an ultra wide screen display, which the one I just reviewed recently, that is a 21.9 display. So you're looking at 32.9, which is huge, and 29.9. These are being called double full HD monitors, and what these will allow you to do with that such a wide display, they'll allow you, if you're using a VR headset, you'll have your entire field of vision almost filled up, which is pretty cool because it's going to give you.
I don't understand that. What do you mean? If I have a VR headset, my entire field of vision is filled up by the headset.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get that either, but that's like the whole... I think that if you output to this... I don't know.
Like AR would make more sense because AR, you could potentially have like all sorts of things on your screen standing out,
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what that meant, but that's what was in the story.
Article.
Yeah.
Okay.
But these will also have a very dynamic curve as well. So an 1800R curve.
Which is definitely needed.
Yeah. And the panels, they'll have different versions, but one will have G-Sync, one will have FreeSync. And they'll be 144Hz, which is awesome.
But why can they hit 144Hz? Because they're only 1080p.
No, they're not 1080p.
I thought they were.
No, so this is a, the 49 inch is 3840 by 1080.
So 1080p.
Well, yeah, you're right. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I thought you meant like 1080p, you know what I mean?
No, yeah. The vertical resolution is 1080.
Yeah.
But they are doing the 29.9 in a 1200.
Yeah, 3840 by 1200.
Which is 4K.
Yeah.
Okay. It would be super impressive if they could do it in 4K resolution.
Yeah, that's true. I think that the biggest thing is that, at least for me, using even in the 21:9 ultra wide, is just like the horizontal space that you do get is so nice.
I just want the pixel density.
You know? Yeah. Oh no, I hear you. I think that we're all waiting for that, and I think a lot of like hardcore gamers who want to spend like thousands of dollars on monitors, they're like waiting for that. And I think we're getting there. We're not that close yet. I think that these, even the one I have, while it does look great for gaming, like if you're a serious gamer, you're gonna go get the Asus 144Hz display. You're not gonna get that ultra wide like I have. I think those ultra wides are for like, they're great for me, like to do like a little bit of gaming, but a lot of productivity stuff. Like it's great for being like,
I could see them being good for immersion in like an MMO or RPG. But when you actually, for like competitive FPS stuff, you probably want a smaller monitor.
Yeah, you'd want a smaller monitor, and obviously you want at least 144Hz. We're seeing the 240s come out now.
Yeah.
You know, but it's cool to see that they're like really, at least for me, like I think it's cool that they're really embracing this crazy wide thing.
Yeah, no.
Because I'm a huge fan of it, and I think that it's much better than three different displays, at least for me.
Totally.
So, from there we moved to Western Digital, and they released their first portable solid state drive, and this is kind of a big deal, just for the fact that there's so many people, so many creators, so many, even me, like on the go, like my on the go hard drive is a portable USB 3.1 SSD from Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it, and I would never like not use it, especially like this is my drive that has all my video stuff on it, so when I go into edit I have that like fast like 400 megabytes a second to do video, especially now that I'm working in 4K. Like you need that fast speed. I mean, you just do. And if you're anybody who's going back and forth between a PC at home and your laptop or anything, you want that fast speed. So Western Digital, they unveiled, which is, it's being called their My Passport SSD. Who would have thought? And it has a new smaller design, which is much like the Samsung, because obviously it doesn't need to be the size of a normal hard drive, because it's just chips on a PCB basically. And it's very, very small, nice small design, uses a Type-C connector, which is good as well. We'll see this again become more popular as time goes on. They see speeds up to 515 megabytes a second, so very, very good, very fast. And this will be, I think that again, this will be one of the drives, just like everybody I know who does like video work uses this Samsung, so this is going to be like one of those drives, I believe.
Yeah, just a competitor for that. Or another... Yeah, competitor, and then just another item in that segment.
Yeah, and with all these drives, they don't require any external power. It's all through the USB, so, you know.
Yeah.
And they'll be offering it in 256, 512, and 1 terabyte. The 1 terabyte is 400, the 512 is 200, and the 256 is 100, so...
Nice.
Yeah, so it's great. Like I said, these, if you're like used to using like a portable, like a USB 3.0 normal hard drive, and then you go to this SSD, like you'll never go back. That's what I was doing for a while.
You've got 3.1.
Yeah.
And you can just crush some speeds.
Yeah, so if you have like a laptop that has USB 3.1, you know.
You're going to get those. Is it 580 they got it at?
515.
515. That's getting right up there to the theoretical limit of the 3.1 too, so that's sweet.
Yeah, so like I said, these, like I said, whenever I transfer stuff off this thing, like I love it. And they're like so small, like even, like I said, even like the normal My Passport portable drives, like they're small, but these are like tiny. Like this,
nothing to it.
Yeah, like this Samsung one I have, it's like, it's like the actual size is like smaller than a credit card, and it's probably like I don't even know how thick it is. It's, I mean, it's obviously thicker than a credit card, but
yeah, the Samsung one is exceptionally small.
Yeah, this like it's awesome. Like in the amount of like, if I'm like a creator and I'm like traveling all the time and I don't have like, I had to have this stuff in my backpack, like carrying this over like, you know, other, like it's amazing. I love
100%. If you're a creator that needs that, you've got to have it.
Yeah, so it's cool that Western Digital, obviously they're one of the big players in the hard drive market, and now they have this, and I think they're going to be sending me one, so I'm pretty pumped to check it out. So
nice.
Yes, and then finally talking about SSDs, Aqua Computer released their micro, their Cryo M.2 Micro M.2 SSD cooler, and this is sadly needed these days.
I think it's cool that it's needed.
Yes,
that means that the speeds are too hot. Too
yes, fast, which is if perfect. You're using an M.2 PCI Express SSD, especially one like the Samsung 950 series or 950 960 series, they get very hot, and when these controllers get so hot, it will actually throttle your speed, meaning that you won't get your speeds that you want. So Aqua Computer, mainly known for water blocks, they have created an M.2. It's basically just like a metal heat sink that goes on your M.2 drive.
Yeah,
and it's gonna cool it down. I think it looks cool. It's like that old school look.
Way better.
Yeah,
I think it's just it's another cool opportunity to stick some cool fins on something, you know?
Yeah, and this is small enough, and you can paint it if you wanted. Like,
cool, man. I think this is a touch that everything needs now.
Yeah, I like it.
It's cool. And like, beyond, like, this one's nice and small and compact. It can't be more than a quarter inch tall?
Probably, yeah.
I think that there's opportunity here to do some cool designs and stuff, because not everybody cares about the space down there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
just another cool thing that we can see some cool case mod type stuff come out for.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like, that's like the next thing. Like, okay, I have my M.2s. Now these are going on them. And now that's going to add. Now I'm going to put like a logo on here. And then that's going to be like part of my build. Like, it's cool.
I cannot wait for M.2 SSD water blocks.
I think somebody had to build one already.
Somebody's got one already?
Well, possibly.
I got to Google it.
Or like somebody made a custom one, I'm sure. Although it is small enough that like getting the tubing, I don't know.
No, it must happen. It only looks like that too. I don't know if there is one. There's ones for the PCI Express ones.
Yeah, I've seen those before.
Yep. Which, because those things got hot too. Those are kind of like outdated now, you know?
Yeah, because if you have a motherboard that has a M.2 PCI Express, if you have like the Z170, Z270 board or an X99 board, you're good to go. They should have at least one M.2 that's that speed. And yeah, but these are great. This will kind of segue into what's coming next week, is that I'm reviewing the ADATA XPG SX8000, and it's an M.2 PCI SSD, super, super fast, has rated speeds of 2400 megabytes a second read and 1100 megabytes a second write, so it's like much faster than your traditional SSD, takes up no space inside your computer, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
These are great, so maybe you could develop a water cooling kit for it.
Dude, I think I'm going to partner with EK, because... Well, everybody else is. Gonna get on this. I bet they're in development. Because anything that anybody ever sticks a heat sink on, they make a water block for.
Yeah, yeah. So, and
even
there might,
people don't.
There might be custom ones out there that people have done already, too. So.
Yeah, it could be. I did not see one factory version, though. So that is something that somebody can get on.
Opportunity
is
knocking. So also next week, I'll be taking a look at a Corsair Corsair Dominator Platinum 16 gig kit. This is a DDR4 3200, so running at 3200 megahertz. It's Corsair DOMs, man.
Yeah.
It's like the top of the top.
Cream of the crop.
Yeah, so this is just nice memory. I'll go into it in my review, but this is really great stuff. And I'll be testing it on Z270, which I'm pumped about. We'll talk about that in a second. But these are just awesome. So of that. And I have a desk I'm reviewing.
Oh, really?
Which is the Autonomous Smart Desk 2.0. I'm sure some of you guys have seen this. This is the desk that moves up and down. They contacted me about a month ago about reviewing one of these desks, and I was like, sure. Like, I was already using a standing desk at home. Well, like a jerry-rigged standing desk at home.
You got some milk crates on top of your desk?
Well, not on top of my desk. Like, I actually had these, like, my dad built these stands, which are made of wood, that, like, I put my desk up on. But it still wasn't, like, the perfect height, and it was, like, it just, I mean, it worked, and it was, like, yeah, but it wasn't like this. This fully motorized, so it would go up and down, and it's actually really, really nice, and I think that their price is great, too, because, like,
yeah, some of the... Yeah, I was going to say, I'm surprised at how cheap that is, actually.
Yeah, the one they sent me was, like, more expensive. Like, if I spec it out right now... if I spec mine out, so mine was, the one they sent me was $549.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So it's a little bit more expensive, but again, I think that if you're looking for something like this, it obviously it helps you, like, be a little bit more healthy because you're standing, and it's great because, like, I can the beginning of the day when I feel great, I can stand, and then towards the end of the day, I can sit down and relax more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it kind of gives you that. So I'll have that as well. There might be some other stuff that I'm working on, but I'm working on a lot of stuff right now for the site and just for our testing and tons of stuff going on. So a lot of cool stuff coming next week. And so that is basically the end of the podcast. Besides trying to sell a house. Wait, have you sold your current house? Are you live? Wait, did you buy a new house?
We have a purchase agreement for a new house, so okay. Yes, and also maybe no.
Okay.
Because there's we did have the inspection and stuff, and there's been more issues with it than we thought, so we're undecided on it. We're still working through that, and no, we have not sold our current house.
Okay, just wanted to know. So, that's what's going on with Derek.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this week I didn't really do much. I've been working so much. I built a new if you follow us on Instagram and if you use Instagram stories, I actually went out and bought the they're from PrimoChill. They have a Praxis wet bench. I built a brand new test bench for all of our motherboards and memory and all that kind of stuff. So pretty pumped about that. That's yeah. I'm like, nice. the test bench I had was great, but it's just like it's more pain, and like there was really no place to like mount like proper like AIO cooling, and like I kind of had it jerry rigged on there, and it was just like not working out. And I was like, I'm gonna buy something new, and this seems like the cream of the crop when it comes to a test bench, and so far it is. I really, really like it. It just solves all of the problems that like that the other test benches like just don't.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just awesome. So it's going to be used for all motherboards. I'm not sure if I'm going to put the Ryzen system on the old test bench or what. I'm not sure yet. If I'm
just sure, put the AMD part on the jerry rig test bench.
Well, here's the thing: is that the new test bench, like, I'm going to use it to test the SSDs, and I'm going to use it to test memory as well as motherboards. So like that's all Intel stuff currently. So you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But it looks great. Like I said, I'll post a picture tonight actually on the Instagram of what it looks like. It looks awesome. So
sweet.
So yeah. So that is it for the podcast, guys. If you have any questions about anything we talked about, we have a full show notes page that has links to everything. So you can click through and you can get all the information. We probably missed some stuff because it's, you know, it's Sunday and it's later at night and we're old, so we might have forgot something. but if you're looking to subscribe to the podcast, you can do it directly on the website or in all of your podcasting software, whatever you use, iTunes. It's just Think Computers, all one word. So until next week, catch you guys later.